Thank you for getting started.
Okay. So you can see the screen just fine, right?
Yes.
Okay. So is Rodney with us?
I have to admit that I am juggling several things, and so I logged in from my office and my computer and my phone. Let me walk down the hall and see if
I think he signed on, so he's probably sitting around. So I'm ready to kind of get started.
He needs a minute.
Oh, okay.
He's talking to somebody, and he asked me if I just tell you it'll be a minute.
Okay, sure, no problem. So how are you doing overall?
Oh, gosh, fantastic, really.
Yeah.
Overwhelmed, but fantastic, if you think about it.
Okay.
Well, Roddy and I also work on a concept called practice acquisition, where we participate in a group where we, you know, send out notes and then we call them and ask if we can have coffee. Any idea of leveraging and picking up, you know, blocks of business at a time. We have not, neither one of us have, I've done that once before on a little bitty slice of business. It was all annuities. I just bought like 12 contracts that were all virtually the same.
Okay.
And I'm going to say 7 or 8.
That's years. Like a mastermind group, right?
Not that. I bought, someone was getting out of the insurance business, and so he just sold me his trail annuities, just a little bitty book, and all I did was buy them. But that's the only practice acquisition I ever did.
Okay.
We're trying to go in and get somebody exiting the business and buy a book. But that's what we, like I've got a 4-call scheduled between 10:30 and 11 today is follow-up that I told him that's when I'd call, and that's the only thing I have. That's in about 70 minutes, you know, 70 to 90 minutes, something like that. I noticed you put on your scheduler a 2-hour block.
Oh, so yeah, but that's, we're only going to go until 8:15.
Okay, well, that's fine. I just, I don't think it's a conflict. I was just kind of looking ahead.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and that was just because when you schedule go-to meeting, they do it in hour blocks. So.
Yeah, you don't want to get cut off if you're close to getting done.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it's really early for you out there, huh?
Well, it's 7:19. You know, when I ran the West Coast region, I mean, I was out the door at 5 a.m. Mostly so, because so much of what we did was so New York-centric. So I was always on calls and things of that nature, so... but I've been away from that for a bit, so, but, you know, every now and then, you know, I've got some folks on the East Coast that I have to deal with, but, you know, it's out. So, I
hear about heard, oh, you're
okay.
Great.
All right. Well, look, why don't we, I don't believe Corinne will be on this call, will she?
No.
Okay. So let's kind of go through a couple of things. What I want to do today is I want to get through this information, then you can ask me, interrupt me for questions, and then I'll circle back for anything else that might be on your mind. The reason I want to do this is because it really starts to align the team. Do you all have a team business plan at this point?
No.
Okay. So this is going to be very helpful. So I'm going to first take you through the document, and then I will send it out to you after I'll call sometime today. So this is the business planning and strategy document that I developed for financial advisor teams. And as you can see from the table of contents, we've got the introduction, a team's vision statement, purpose statement, the team's value proposition, creating your elevator pitch for your team, the 5-star model analysis, action plan, goal setting, team-based goals. So this is going to serve as a template for you to develop a plan. So you don't have to necessarily reinvent the wheel. The template is created along the lines of Supernova. Okay?
Okay.
And then we get into the forecasting app, which I want to spend a fair amount of time getting through today. So just to set this up, this is going to be a roadmap you're going to create for the team. And when team members go through it together, it helps crystallize the team. Okay? Get everybody on the same page, get the thinking, get the thought process out, and so have unity of purpose. So that's what you're trying to establish when you go through this exercise. And it's something that should be not tucked away, but brought out at least on a quarterly basis so that you're measuring your progress toward what you said that you would accomplish as a team. Okay?
Okay.
So the next part here is vision statement. You know, you might have different vision statements given your practice. So now what we're trying to do is unify it. So, I like to think of a vision statement as a message that ignites what your team is working toward. It's aspirational in so many ways. It's the dream, it's the end game, and it evokes the sense of achievement and fulfillment. So, I want to give you an example. So this is maybe something that, you know, when you're at meetings, you might communicate your vision. But it's something that you all are taking ownership of. Okay? Your aspirational message, you say it to yourselves, you're taking ownership. So I throw in one example. We desire to be the preeminent financial advisor team in our market that provides a holistic approach to our clients and offer more than a commodity client experience. So you come up with your aspirational message and write it in. And this may, you know, evolve over time, but you should sit down and go through the exercise and create your vision statement. All right. This purpose statement. So the purpose statement gets everybody on the same page, provides direction, clarity, and it should describe the why and what you do as a team. Again, helps establish congruency on the team. Keeps the team members from acting at cross purposes so that whenever you see a team conflict in terms of your focus, you just ask, is that really the purpose of our team that we set out to do? So that's where you bring yourself back into alignment. Because teams will have sometimes conflicting messages, and it creates dysfunction in the team. And if you have a purpose statement, it helps to avoid team dysfunction. So Nike says, hey, we want to bring inspiration and innovation to every athlete in the world. And there's no question in anybody's mind that that's not what they're trying to do. And I have Starbucks down there. We want to inspire and nurture the human spirit, one person, one cup, and one neighborhood at a time. And as you know, they're everywhere. So then you write your aspirational and unifying purpose statement below. Okay. Still with me, right?
Yeah.
Okay, 4.0, the team's value proposition. Now, this is a of the results that the client gets from using your services, your products. And when your value prop is very specific, the better. So, you know, it's saying, well, who are you guys? Well, we're a financial resource to give you the confidence to make informed financial decisions. So you want to make sure that you can connect your value proposition emotionally with your clients. and then you'd write your value proposition. Okay. Now, the 30-second elevator pitch. This is, you're at the museum gala, and somebody says, oh, Ray, it's good to meet you. So what do you do for a living? What should not come out of your mouth is, I'm a financial advisor with Ameriprise. Okay? You want to invoke an elevator pitch that helps people invite you in. So it's, what do you offer or specialize in? And it's got to have a key benefit, such as help them make money, feel secure, make them feel good. Okay? So here's an example. My team's practice is dedicated to be a trusted wealth management resource for affluent clients to build, manage, and preserve wealth. And, you know, our clients have found that my conservative strategies make them money, reduce risk, and help them feel secure. That is your elevator pitch, your message to folks. It's not, I'm a financial advisor working for Ameriprise. So you want something that is emotional, that resonates with your clients. And so you'll have to spend some time kind of thinking about that. Okay? All right. Any questions on that?
That seemed really long, candidly.
Yeah. You can shorten it up, but it's 30 seconds. Okay?
Right, right.
All right. Now, so, you know, you might only say the first sentence, and that's it. All right. So now, your five-star model analysis. And the second sentence was meant to, the person says, well, could you kind of explain a little more what you're talking about? Then you throw in the second sentence. But it's like just the one sentence first. And I said, well, what do you mean? And then you go on and you get the second sentence. Okay. The five-star model analysis. This is almost, are you familiar with the term SWOT analysis?
Yes,
SWOT?
Sir.
Okay. Strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. So what we're doing here is we're taking Supernova and importing the five-star model to evaluate your team's strengths, weaknesses, and areas for improvement. And this is where you all sit down as a team and really go through what you're good at and where you have developmental needs and what do you want to improve upon. So, you know, you're going to evaluate yourself, for example, on planning. Okay? And you want to ensure that every client has a financial plan, or that he or she is like a forensic scientist, understanding what the client really wants, not just what he or she says they want. You have to drill down. So you're going to evaluate yourself there. Plan implementation. So you put them together, but then they get put on the shelf, and so many of the items that get discussed don't get implemented. So you want to evaluate yourself on plan implementation. And that all parts of the plan are implemented consistently for every client. And as you know, we talk about these topics as you create your monthly agendas. Okay, marketing. Responsible for overseeing the acquisition strategy of the team. You know, which is the 96-4-2-2-1 and the VIPSA model that we talk about. Okay? Brand and service. Okay. And there may be different delegated responsibilities on the team or shared responsibilities, or somebody has primary responsibility or somebody has secondary responsibility for some of these items. We talk about delegation of duties and responsibilities, but now we're kind of drilling down getting into the detail of who's going to own parts of the five-star model. Okay. And, you know, a lot of the branding is going to be done by, let's see, Corinne. Okay. And leadership, you know, while functional leadership can rotate somewhat, but somebody has got to be responsible for trying to hold the team accountable. Team confidence, team skills, team knowledge, team accountability. Okay? And so you can evaluate yourself, your strengths, your weaknesses, and areas for improvement so that you are continuing to grow and evolve. Any questions? Let me stop there because we've gone through, you know, some heavy-duty information here, which you'll digest, but it'll all be on, this is recorded. So let me stop for a moment and ask if you have any questions about what we've gone through thus far.
Well, I think this is great. I mean, it's really good information. It's you know, creates vision and focus that it's not overwhelming, you know, to do at this point anyway. So
no, and it's really good. Yeah. Okay. And so again, we've got everybody on the team on the same page. And the reason I did this is I was finding that I could get teams through Supernova, but there was some dysfunction on some of these teams we were working with where, you know, when you start evolving teams and they start getting, you know, 3-4 members, all pulling in different directions with no unity of purpose, you don't really get the leverage that you'd like to see on teams. Okay, so the action plan. Now what we've done is we've done some analysis, and now it's about execution. So what I've done is I've created a sample template. And you can recreate this on your own. It's basically task, timing, and responsibility. So if there's a planning initiative and it came out that in your areas for improvement that somebody's got to get a CFP, for example, so you plug that in as a task. And what's the timing? You want them to get that done by, you know, hypothetically, March 30th. And who's going to be responsible for that? Well, that's going to be Joe on the team. And then you said, look, we really have to improve our plan implementation. Too much has fallen through the cracks. That's got to be an ongoing timing issue for us. And we're going to have Mary on the team be fully responsible for it. Okay. Then we have a separate initiative under plan implementation, where you can, you know, decide what the tasks ought to be. They can be 2 or 3 tasks, but don't come at the end of the thing and having 20 things that you're just not going to have time to implement. So you're going to have to get to the core and constantly drive the things that are most important. Okay? That's really, really critical. Because you could easily list 5 or 6 things per initiative. So don't have too many initiatives. Don't have too many tasks that can't be implemented. I'd like you to see you accomplish the 1 or 2 things that are most critical. Okay, another sample initiative would be that the team needs to hire an additional advisor. Or it might be you've got to have someone that you're going to transition certain account relationships to. So what are the tasks involved in that? It's about sourcing candidates. It's about doing an inter-office search. And then it's the onboarding process. You know, it's not enough to add a new team member, but you got to have an onboarding process so that person gels with the team. I have a chapter in the book I wrote that really, well, there's two chapters. One really gets specific on hiring, and the other in terms of onboarding team members, bringing them in to your culture dynamic. And I will tell you from experience that I learned is, you know, oftentimes I would be a part of corporate teams, and there was no onboarding process. You're just kind of thrown in, go figure it out, sink or swim. And, you know, why do we leave people up to their own devices? Why don't we just make it easy for them so that they can be successful? All right. So what I've done is I've created a blank template. You can copy it and paste it, and you can, you know, put your own initiative in there, task, timing, and responsibilities. Okay. Any questions on that one so far?
No.
Okay.
No.
So now we get into team goal setting. And, you know, we've all heard of this SMART formula that goals have to be specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time-based. So we're going to take you through the forecasting app to help you plug in metrics for each of these things. So we're going to make that really, really easy for you in just a moment. So that's what this is designed to do, and you plug in your goals. But this process is not going to be, you know, a five-hour process. So I'm going to show you how to get this done in minutes. Okay, and then you're going to identify, based on the things that we're showing you, is your client acquisition goals. And, you know, prospects, COIs, mastermind groups, niche markets, community boards, that whole 96, you know, 4-2-2-1 model. Okay. Then this piece is all about, you know, who's going to take ownership of team goals. Dual responsibility, singular responsibility. So, you know, goals have to be owned by somebody. Otherwise, they get forgotten about. And there shouldn't be guesswork about who's going to own the goal. Now, ownership of the goal doesn't mean that someone is entirely responsible for making sure that they implement or execute on that goal, but they're taking ownership to make sure that the team is executing on that goal. Okay? And so, when you have your weekly meetings, you're going to look at team activities to determine how you're tracking your goals. Now, the 24-month product and service agenda, we've gone through that, but now what you get to do is you get to lay it out in your business plan. You have your simple agenda, you have your months, and then who's the responsible team member? And see, this is what I like to do is I like to move objectives, goals, and initiatives to ownership. Because without ownership, they generally don't get done. Okay? So, you know, I was, you know, we were looking at a team that we were working with, and this team went from 2.6 million to 3.6, and the team leader is so relentless about ownership, you know, who owns this, who owns that, and in a friendly way, and that's how they end up executing and getting it done. So I have a blank template in here, and any questions so far?
No, sir. I don't have any.
Okay. And like I say, a lot of this, you know, we've gone through, but now what we're doing is we're kind of putting what we're learning into action. So this is investing in your practice. You know, and that's when you're looking at your team and you're saying, look, you know, rather than just haphazardly, you know, spend money, you know, are we spending it in the right areas where we'll get, you know, I say try to get, for every dollar you put in, try to get $3 back, right? So it's training, coaching, knowledge improvement. It's staff retention, you know, and sometimes staff retention is, here, you've been doing such a great job this week. Why don't you and your husband go out for dinner for two at the restaurant of your choice, bring us the bill. Maximum of, you know, $100 or $150, whatever. Acquisition of additional support. Developing the team's brand. Market development. Client acquisition and retention. Supplemental technology or software. You know, that helps make your business run properly. So what you're going to do here is basically create this little budget and determine the amount of your investment somewhere between 0 and 10% of your revenues. Then you're going to assign team members for line item responsibility. So I have a little sample budget. You can mix it up. You can put your own selections in the boxes. So it's expense item, cost, the responsible party, and the timing. And then I have the categories on the left.
Is this document going to be editable?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Absolutely.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, what I wanted to do is just really give you the template and have you, you can do one of two things. You can print it, line through it, retype it, do whatever you like. I have it in PDF and I have it in Word. Then we're on to your appendix. And that's your team checklist, where you're just going to say, hey, do we have our business plan? Are we implementing the 5-star model? Have we converted it to initiatives, our vision statement, mission statement, and, you know, team budget? So it's just really a checklist of everything that we talked about. Then the team forecast analysis is the next thing that we cover. So we're going to leave this portion of the business plan now, and I'm going to take you through the forecast analysis. Any questions before we leave that relative to the business plan?
No.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let me just put that out. Okay. This session here is going to be interactive. So what you can do with this web-based app, which will be available to you online, is you put in your names.
Russ.
And you don't have a team member C. Okay? So what I want to do is let's go through and put in some annualized production figures. They don't have to be accurate, but okay, so where did you end up last year, Rodney?
I am trying to remember the exact number. Let me look at that a minute.
What you can do is you can give me, you know, hypothetical. Hypothetical,
yes,
today.
385. I was at just about 420.
Okay. What do you think your payout is?
37 for me.
Right.
That's rough. 37.
Okay. We got 37% payout. And what this does is it calculates the compensation based on payout. And it looks at the equity splits. Now, the equity splits don't necessarily have to be the splits that you all follow for the team, but this just illustrates what the splits are in terms of production. Now, what we did is we put this on a 2,000-hour year, so that we could come up with some optics in terms of what your actual billable hours are in terms of comp and in terms of what we call production credits or revenues, right?
Okay.
So what you're doing here is you're billing yourselves out at, you know, $192 to $210 per hour. So that's what your time is worth, okay? And if you did it based on comp, it's $72 to $78. It averages for the team $75 to $201. So if you wanted to start moving toward $300 an hour or $400 an hour, then we look at this and say, okay, what do we need to do next? And this has got your total team production. So this self-calculates all that, okay? Now, the other thing I want to do is I want to say, well, if you took that baseline and you grew your business going forward, year 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, you could maneuver an annualized growth rate, okay? So, let's say that you want to grow this year by 20%. That means you're going to be adding 159, almost 160,000 in incremental growth to get yourselves to total team production. Okay? Now, you can kind of begin to reverse this out and do what I call scenario planning and say, well, you know, we really... you know, if 1 + 1 is going to equal 3 and we're going to get the leverage and we implement Supernova, maybe we could grow by, let's throw it out, 30%. Well, you grow 30%, you're going to add 242,000 in incremental production. And now the team is, grossing 1,000,007. Okay? So let's say in year 2, we're going to grow at 25. Year 3, we're going to grow at 20. Year 4, we still think we can grow at 20. In year 5, we still think we can grow at, well, maybe we grow at 17%. So you can change your growth rates. So if we're going to be a $2 million team by the fifth year, these are the growth rates we're going to need to have. And this is the incremental year-over-year growth rate in production from year 4 to year 5. Okay? And as you can see, by year 5, it's almost the equivalent of adding another producer. Okay, you with me so far?
Right. I think what you're telling me is by your thought, it's more like adding two or three producers based on where we are now.
Except what's happening is we're going to show you where you're getting the lift from. Okay? So, and that's a really good question, so make sure you come back and ask me again. So look at your velocity rate on assets. Some people call it velocity rate, some call it ROA. What do you think your velocity rate is on the assets that you bring in? 0.7, 0.8, 1.1. What do you think?
Mine was about 0.82, but let me see.
So you're going to kind of plug in kind of an average velocity rate. Russ?
What I've been doing is I usually assume 1% on 80%, and I assume upfront money either in the form of insurance premium or transactional money on 10 to 20%, and then I weight it. So I think I usually use a higher number.
Okay.
But with price compression, 0.8 doesn't sound unreasonable.
All right. Well, maybe and if you do more insurance business, maybe that gets to 0.9. Okay. Clearly, price
I'm right at 1% right now. But historically, I've always used for planning purposes 0.75%. But whatever you think is appropriate.
Okay. So I'm gonna again. This is hypothetical. So look at what you need an asset at a 0.9, okay, to do this kind of production number. 116 million?
Million a month first year, it looks like.
Mm-hmm. 145 million in year two, 174 million, 208, up to 275 million if you're going to do 2.2. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's showing you basically the assets that would be needed. Now, you could always say, well, look, we think this thing may jump down a little bit. And so, you can make some projections here. And then say it goes back up. So you can be interactive.
Okay, and then that assets needed in millions, I think what you're saying is that's per year, not additive, not cumulative.
Right. Yeah, that's per total.
So in year
total,
a little different than we think now, adding $275 million is a large number.
Yeah, so if you were at 208 in year four, you're jumping up to 275.
Yeah, my brain begins to resist that.
Okay.
Think about it, because it's so much different, than where we are today. I mean, we'd have to add for this year, we'd have to add 46 million.
Mm-hmm.
And you're saying we're at 80 and we're going to 116. So that's the 46?
Right.
Well, I don't think we have 80 million in assets.
Okay.
Yeah, so we probably each have like 35 or 36 million or something like that.
Right.
So Curtis, it does seem a little bit hard to imagine that as being something I could build actions around, but I don't know how to do that.
Right. So look at this. Your velocity rate?
More, you don't need as much, you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So your velocity rate is probably a little high right now. See, 87 million?
Yeah, I calculated mine at 1.16 for the previous 18.
Yeah. Yeah. So what you do is you come in and you just kind of do your scenario planning, based on that. So this cow kind of calculates it for you and tells you, you know, that, you know, with these ancillary products like mortgages and insurance and annuities and that sort of thing, where your velocity rates are a little bit higher, that some of that business is not done at 80 basis points or 70 basis points. And if you're doing managed money, well, you're doing, you know, managers, portfolio managers, so your velocity rate even there is probably, do you do that business at 1%? You do it at 55 basis points? It probably depends. Is it fixed? Is it equity? Is it a balance? So, that's what your blended rate is, and you can do scenario planning based on that. But if you're going to get to 2.2 million, that's where your assets are going to need to be if your velocity rate is going to go down. Okay?
Well, the talk around Supernova is to double in 18 to 24 months.
Exactly.
What would it look like if we were to double in 2 years?
Okay. Yep. So you basically go from 805,000 to about 1,000,006. So let's kind of play with the numbers a little bit. If we rent off your baseline this year and you went up 38, 37, yeah, you're getting pretty close.
I mean, I would think that, you know, this is going to be a ramp up. We may not have as much in place with the COIs, the mastermind, and just the process.
Right.
So I would think that's kind of how I planned, you know, just individually, is it would be, you know, I hope we do, and that's the goal, is to double in 2 years, but I think most of that may be next year.
Yeah.
Kind of like a 30, then a 60 or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't think of your double happening in let's say the first 12 months, but I want you to see where the change kind of occurs. And notice I don't have to input your names. So what we're going to do here is, I'm going to take out some accounts. How many accounts do you currently have, Rodney?
Let's go to 65.
Okay. All right.
I'm talking about families, right?
Mm-hmm. Household.
That's the good, the bad, the ugly, though. That's definitely not key clients. Yeah, mine is closer to 100. It's more like 90. And that is definitely the good and a lot of bad and ugly.
Okay. All right.
So let's just say regular old people that don't have that much money.
Right. So what we want to do here is we want to get to a capacity of maybe 85, no more than 100. Okay? So let's look at how this translates. 155 accounts, the average assets per account is about 596, almost 600. Average revenue per account, 7,000. Okay. Then in year two, things start to jump where you've added accounts, but you've probably also gotten rid of some as well. But your max is 85.
Okay.
Now, you're going to add some accounts in year three, okay, but you're also using the five stair step model. You are also transitioning clients out of your book, okay? So that's the first part of this equation. The second part of the equation is what's your target. So let's go back and just recant to me what your minimum asset threshold is per account. What did you target?
350 for minimum for me.
Okay. And what's the target?
750.
Okay. So that's where you have to really start to deal with more affluent people. Right now, it looks like it's probably 596, and the average revenue is about 7,000. Okay? Now, your asset thresholds, if I plug in that bake in a 25% increase in targeted assets, okay, then your minimum revenue per household jumps to 11,000 to 14,000 to 17,000 to 20,000. Okay. That's probably hard to imagine right now.
Yeah.
That, you know, there are people out there that could give us 20,000 per, you know, per relationship. So now you have to begin to start to adjust your thinking in terms of who you're targeting. So while today you're targeting people with 750, that's got to move to 1 million to 1.5 million. You know, there are people out there that, you know, if you don't have 3 million, I'm sorry, we can't work with you. So what happens, you're going to come up with a number and end up, you know, you may reach a comfort level or you may reach a breakout level where now the confidence is, you know, people with $3 million in household assets don't intimidate me. We can work with them. Okay. So now you begin to start to move your targets. Okay. $1.3 million, $1.9 million. Okay. All right. One of the things, so this is all hypothetical. I can move my thresholds down in terms of assets, if I wanted to. I can look at my asset growth chart. And, you know, I'm looking at assets needed to generate, you know, certain levels of production. $351. Sometimes you get a lift based on the markets. So you can hover over your dashboards, your production credit growth. That's a compounded annual growth rate of 26% in terms of total team production to get your team 1.1 million, jump to 1.6 million, to 2 million, to 2.3 to 2.8. Now, your business plan is constantly evolving too. You know, you may have to have your own client associate that you're working with instead of shared for the team. Your asset thresholds. Okay. So in other words, if you looked at where you were today and you said, oh man, I can't imagine that, but now, you know, you might be adding a team member. You might be adding what we term as an investment associate who doesn't have a production number. you know, who gets paid, you know, to work with you. Any number of combinations to help drive that kind of performance. Or bigger, it's either more assets or it's more relationships. You get more relationships, you can't deliver the service to get more assets. Right?
Right.
So this is, you know, growing at a 36% rate. So you can do what-if scenarios, and you can go back to your team hypotheticals, and you can redo this. You know, you can, you know, but your payout is also going to be increasing too, right?
Right.
So your billable hours are going to increase, the additive increments in production, so on and so forth. So I can change these growth rates. I can do whatever I want to do my scenario planning. Okay? So that's how this works. Let me open it up for questions and thoughts and things that you have on your mind.
Well, for me, on the maximum number of team-based accounts, right where you are, that toggle left and right, the dot that you move,
uh-huh.
I didn't quite grasp what it's encapsulating, because it seems a little nebulous. You know, like if I make my minimum $1 million or I make it $100,000, what is it playing off of?
Which one here?
Your blue dot that you move. Down bottom left?
Oh, this one?
One? Yeah, moved it. But what I don't understand is if minimum acceptable threshold, say it was, you know, I don't really understand how that plays into the math.
Okay, so the way it plays into the math is you are going to establish different targets for assets. Right now, the target is let's say, 750.
Target, right.
Okay. So what's happening here is that, you know, you're moving your growth targets to, this is a 24% target. So if you're saying we're only going to target accounts with 750, then the incremental growth is set here. But if you're going to end up trying to do these kind of numbers up here, you're going to have to move your asset targets up. So in other words, you can't do the same kind of business keeping your asset thresholds the way they are, because you'd have to end up taking on more account relationships, and you don't have the bandwidth to do it.
Right, okay.
So I could say, okay, 100. Okay. So look at the revenue per account when I just add more relationships. See the difference? So you have to decide what the maximum number of households you're willing to work with.
So really all you're saying is if we're willing to work our ourselves to the bone, then we can have smaller relationships and do it. If we want to be more efficient and more profitable, we've got to elevate revenue per account and assets per account. So that's basically what you're doing. I just didn't understand the 124% reference.
Yeah.
It just didn't mean anything to me.
Yeah, that was just really going to be the targets of household assets. So over here, you can target $1.4 million as your minimum household threshold. So some of this is getting into your psyche now about the amount of time it takes to establish somebody that's got 750 versus $1.4 million. It's probably the same amount of time, right?
Right.
So the question then is comfort. How do you take your comfort level from the 750 to start targeting folks that have a million? Do you raise the targets? Those are conversations you have to have as a team. Now, once your team fortifies its service model and service experience, doing 12-4-2, you now have the rationale to go after bigger relationships. You're communicating with your COIs, and you're communicating with your clients on terms of the relationships that you're looking for. Okay? So you're starting to set your targets. That's where you're going to get your incremental growth.
And so
otherwise,
you're saying we're going to get more gifted at communicating when we do BIPSA. We're going to become more artful at communicating why we really can only help people with 1.5 million or 2 instead of 500,000. Why?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Because, you know, look, you've elevated your service level. And so you have to get paid for it. Otherwise, you're going to be billing yourself out at, you know, $192 per hour, $210 per hour.
Right.
Wouldn't you like to be getting to $300 or $400 per hour in terms of your time and how it's valued?
And, I think we can get there. Now, the service, definitely we need to implement that, and that's a longer ramp up than I think we either one of us would have wanted, but I think we have the resources and the capability to serve those larger clients. I mean, you know, we have a fair amount of, you know, 5 million, 4 million, 3 million, you know, clients now, and they're very loyal.
Exactly. And you have capacity. If you have this organized, everything gets scheduled, you're going to have some capacity to bring on other accounts. Now, here's the question. How do you create more capacity? The way you create more capacity, you either hire an additional person or you make adjustments in terms of your threshold that you're willing to work with. So if somebody comes in with $1.5 million or $2 million and they demand the service model that you've created, but you have this person at $385, you really, really like them, then the other way to get capacity is to train someone else in the supernova and shift the relationship to them and work and have them work that account on a split basis with you. Maybe it's a 50-50 split for 2 years, 75-25, while you continue to focus on where the growth is going to occur in your business. So it's an either or. You know, you either bring on an additional team member, but you never want to dilute, you know, what you're doing and saying, okay, now, you know, we're the type of team that will take on, you know, $300,000 relationships. Okay? Those may be butlers. Okay? Related to other households. So you can take butlers, right? Just remember that three butlers, which get a 4-1 service, equal one household relationship. Okay.
Okay.
So is this, how's this resonating with you guys?
It's very clear and makes us have to be more realistic.
Yeah,
very helpful.
Gives you an opportunity to just be introspective about where growth actually occurs in the business, whereas before, you know, Look, it happened to all of us. As a financial advisor, man, if they were living and breathing, I took them.
Right.
You know, and now we're kind of getting a little more scientific about how do we really build our business. And that's what businesses do. They're forecasting, you know, their business. They're making projections. They're looking at how this gets done. And now it starts to make the niche markets, your affinity groups, where your referrals are going to come from, all start to make better sense. Now these are just the numbers. These are just the analytics. You got to do the other things in the business plan to make this a reality, right? Okay.
Now, how much do you think when we're planning, do we need to factor in that, you know, our key clients, the kind of clients we want to duplicate, is a much smaller number than the 65 and whatever it was, 90?
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, what I think you have to do is, one, you have to give those clients that, you know, you're treating everybody the same. You're giving them the elevated service. But there may be clients in that category that don't have the assets that are centers of influence. So when you go back to the 9 screens that we talked about in Supernova, you know, are they likable? Can they generate the revenue? Do they listen to, you know, your advice? Do they provide referrals? Do they have CPAs that are centers of influence? You know, you can affect those in terms of, you know, who you get to keep and who gets to stay over time.
Right. Right.
But keep in mind is if half your book is $300,000 relationships and your minimum target is $750, then pretty soon, you know, the quality of your practice is going to be based on the thresholds that you set.
Right.
So this is transformative, guys. This is getting into a little bit of the psyche of where you can go in this business. And I'm going to give you a little quick story that might help resonate. When Merrill Lynch came out with the cash management account in the 70s, we had a thing called Ready Assets. And Ready Assets was a money market fund. Clients would put money into their money market account. And when we bought securities, we would debit the money market account and transfer manually the assets to pay for the transaction on settlement. Then we came out with the cash management account. It was a $20,000 minimum. It was a combination of a brokerage account and a money market account. So when we made a transaction and the cash became available on settlement, it was automatically swept into the money market. If we bought something, then the money market fund was automatically debited, like we do today. Well, the initial minimum to establish those accounts was $20,000. And I know as funny as it seems, we were like going, wow, $20,000? And some folks were complaining. This is, look, we're stockbrokers. We don't want to be bankers. Well, within like 24 months, the average account size was $275,000. We had no idea that this thing was such an asset gathering tool. So when I say your mental psyche, part of it has to do with your belief in what you can achieve. Right?
Right. Yep.
And so what the firm did is it almost forced us to believe that people had that type of money out there. And they did. So what you're doing by doing scenario planning and planning is you are preparing yourself to stair-step relationships over time. Okay. Well, I think that's enough for you all to kind of ponder on and digest. Later today, I'm going to send all this stuff out to you. I've got a couple of appointments today, and then I'll send it out, and then we're going to get you the link so you can kind of, you know, play with the forecast tool. And then we'll go back and hit week number 10. So what I would ask you to do is get the template, and maybe over a period of 3 weeks, let's say, at least have a good working business plan going for your team.
Okay.
All right. And email me, as always, when there are questions, things that you, you know, want to talk about and further, but you guys are really attentive and, you know, I think we can, you know, we can really get you going and moving this, you know, forward. So I really enjoyed speaking with you today and, you know, have a great rest of the week.
Hey, you too. Great as always.
All right. You're welcome. You take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.